The Catholic Channel on SiriusXM 129 presents America This Week, a smart Catholic take on faith and culture with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
Good day and welcome to the broadcast. I'm Father Matt Malone, editor-in-chief of America Magazine.
And I'm Kerry Weber, executive editor for America. And each week, we offer you the news and analysis from the intersection of the church and the world, gathered by our team at America Magazine.
And one of our team joins us here in the studio, Tim Reedy, who is our deputy editor-in-chief. Nice to see you, Tim.
Yes, good to be with you all. It's been a while since we've been back together.
Well, we thought we would get the band back together for
our reunion tour of 1 hour today.
Yes, exactly. For our grand finale, a little bittersweet. After 5 years, America This Week is coming to an end on the Catholic Channel.
Yeah.
Of course, the work of America and the issues that we talk about is not coming to an end, and we will continue to do what we do at AmericanMagazine.org and through a new season of podcasts that will be launching next fall. And it has been a terrific experience being here and being a part of the Sirius family. That this is just the next evolution in our editorial development. You know, one of our contributors at America Magazine is John Miller, who has really done some great reporting and writing for us over the years, and has contributed this particularly good piece about the church and the opioid crisis.
John Miller, as we mentioned before, is a Pittsburgh-based writer and former staff reporter and foreign correspondent for the Wall Street Journal. His article is called "The Opioid Crisis Demands a New Solution. Churches are hoping to be part of it." John Miller, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
We're very glad to have you back. No pressure. This is our final show, so you know everything you say has additional weight to it today.
Right. You're basically our Bette Midler to our Carson.
So tell us a little bit about how you found this connection between the church's efforts and the current opioid crisis.
So the opioid crisis is one of America's biggest, if not the biggest, health crisis. It killed over 70,000 people in 2017. And now people are kind of moving on to, A, trying to hold people accountable who kind of triggered the crisis by marketing these opiates for pain relief, and then B, trying to figure out the best way of getting people healed. And opiates is, addiction is a tremendously nasty condition. I mean, it's very, very hard to shake. And so there are different approaches. One is to give people these sort of treatment drugs like methadone or Suboxone and gradually wean them away. The other is to preach abstinence and go cold turkey. And what different groups have been finding is that nothing quite works perfectly, and so people are starting to combine solutions. So you have churches offering medication, and you have hospitals inviting in pastors.
Now, John, we had a, you know, when the country was in the throes of the AIDS epidemic, you know, the church's role in all of that was controversial, but on one level, the response of people who were at the ground, sisters, Catholic healthcare workers, was really exceptional. They really rose to the occasion to confront that and to help the people who were facing that health crisis. Do you see a kind of similar movement emerging vis-a-vis the opioid crisis?
Yeah, because people on the ground recognize the reality of things and that it's not always as easy and simple as saying just abstain from drugs, or I guess in the case of the AIDS epidemic, abstain from sex or abstain from using needles. People make decisions, bad decisions sometimes, but that doesn't mean that they deserve to be punished or pay for them for the rest of their lives. They deserve healing. They deserve compassion. And that requires very pragmatic solutions. So in the AIDS epidemic, clean needles or condoms. In this case, treatment drugs or some kind of combined effort where you gradually work your way to abstinence.
And this has become a big pastoral crisis. I mean, you quote the bishop here, Edward Malasek, in the Diocese of Greenberg. So it's right at the level where Catholic leaders have to pay attention to this. And what are they saying? I mean, it seems like they're on the same page as the medical community in a lot of cases.
It's a massive pastoral crisis. And these very strong Catholic areas in Western Pennsylvania and Ohio are some of the hardest hit in the whole country by the opioid epidemic. And they've come around to this growing consensus that There's really no one solution. That it's way too vicious a disease. It's not like it's objectively worse than alcoholism. It's something that just physically most people are. It's not possible for them to just quit cold turkey. They need a gradual solution, and as Bishop Mlacek and Greensburg put it, a solution that involves the entire person, so psychological, physical, and spiritual.
Yeah, one of the things you write about is that sometimes people who are trying to heal from this addiction and who are using these medical or chemical means to do so, there's a stigma around that versus the cold turkey, which I sort of didn't realize myself until reading your piece that some people would sort of look down upon that and say, like, no, look, you have to do it this one certain way. Can you talk a bit about the sort of tension between those two methods and the way in which it's viewed in the medical community versus maybe the 12-step community versus the churches?
Right. Well, the drug got enmeshed in the culture wars in the 1980s with the Reagan war on drugs, and kind of got joined up with abortion as a matter of personal responsibility, and churches sort of came down on the side of casting addiction as a sin. Whereas Father Richard Rohr pointed out to me, the intention of the church should be to heal, and that what Jesus did primarily during his 3 years of ministry was heal, and not castigate people for their sins. And so the church is sort of gradually weaning itself away from this position, because, like I said, it's just too nasty a crisis to have this hard line, that you need some practical medical solutions along with spiritual care. And it's interesting that states and governments and hospitals are finding the same thing. The main sort of anecdotal character in the story is a woman who was prescribed a Percocet, an opiate, after childbirth and became addicted to heroin, and found herself at a treatment center in Huntington, West Virginia, one of the worst places hit, at this Marshall University sort of public hospital unit called PROACT that offers a medical solution for this woman and also spiritual care. So she's now getting both, and she credits it for her recovery, this kind of comprehensive approach.
Yeah, that's interesting. Those places that play these multiple roles, that they can provide the medication, but they also have, you know, some cases a pastor on call who can provide spiritual assistance. Group therapy is a big part of Aaron's story. So people are recognizing the need for this kind of diverse approach.
That's right. And it's really because things have just been so bad. I mean, it's been such a source of suffering. And it's sort of humbling, I think, both for doctors and for pastors and for psychologists. I mean, people are now willing to try anything that works because it is just like such a vicious disease. I mean, one of my sources was a man who had been addicted to heroin. He told me during our conversation, talking to you makes me possibly want to use again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just such a tricky, delicate disease. And I'm sure any of our listeners who have known somebody who struggled with this, who suffered with this, just knows how difficult it is. And I'm really excited about this story and hopefully the impact it can have, and hopefully steer the conversation towards this more pragmatic, comprehensive approach and help people heal.
You live in Pittsburgh. You do a lot of reporting in West Virginia, Western Pennsylvania. You have for us, for other people, to kind of see this crisis up close in perhaps a way that maybe those of us in New York are not seeing it. I mean, what is it like? Do you feel a responsibility to continue to draw attention to this since you're closer to it in many ways?
I mean, definitely. It's sort of impossible to avoid if you drive through any of the towns around in this area. So some of them still have these so-called pill mills with like a picture of like a personified pill with a smiley face dancing, which I saw the other day in a town called Beaver Falls, and I just thought was so shocking. So there's still this kind of remnant of this culture that grew up in the 90s around these pharmaceutical companies, notably Purdue Pharma, marketing these opiates as a safe pain relief. And then these clinics that were little pharmacies that would hand out prescriptions and would sort of have these doctors who would, many of whom are going to jail now, who would give away or prescribe, you know, 5-10 pills a day to anybody. And so, yeah, I mean, it has contributed to the devastation in this area. So I do feel a responsibility as a journalist to make it one of the things that I write about and report about.
Well, I was very surprised when I read the piece, even of the woman you mentioned at the start of the article who was received Percocet for post-childbirth pain. because it seemed to me to be a very strong painkiller for such thing. Like, I don't know anyone. My understanding is she did not have a C-section. I don't know anyone who has just gotten more than like Motrin in the immediate following the childbirth. So it's interesting because I think that follows the what is the responsibility of doctors who make these painkillers available to people, and possibly more so than they should.
So one of the things that happened, and you're right, and thanks to you, Carrie, I did some follow-up reporting on this, and it is quite exceptional to receive a Percocet for a regular childbirth, but it is something that has happened, and it sort of comes from this change in the philosophy of the medical profession where pain was added as a sixth vital sign, and pain relief became like a primary mission of doctors, not just long-term care. And because of the U.S. medical system and the cost of a lot of the therapy that does not involve a pill, the pills became this way cheaper, way more efficient, way quicker alternative to other more organic, more logical, and less destructive methods of pain reduction, like exercise, for example, or other treatments that are just not as destructive.
And what is the demographic of the people who are most profoundly affected by this crisis? You know, I think we here in New York, being demographically myopic, you know, we tend to think that this is this problem is probably worst in these kind of depressed post-industrial places in Ohio and Kentucky, West Virginia. Is that true? Does this really cut across demographics, or is one kind of community or several kinds of communities most profoundly affected?
I think there's some sort of inbuilt, for lack, I mean, I think the right word is racism in the coverage of this, that drug problems in white communities get covered differently than in African-American communities in the cities, because there is a massive opiate problem in cities. And I talked to a Catholic Charities official in Baltimore, and they've had a massive problem. They've also integrated in the Catholic Charities in Baltimore more medical treatment into their programs. So it's very widespread. This touches all parts of American society, as well as the inner cities, as well as more rural areas and Rust Belt and Appalachia and the Midwest.
When you're talking to programs that are trying to address the sort of spiritual and emotional side of this addiction, what are some of the challenges that they're people who are facing these addictions are trying to heal from? What are those emotional things that need to be addressed?
Most people get addicted very early. It's very rare that people get into opiates past the age of 25. So there's often some childhood trauma or kind of direct trigger related to childhood that has been unaddressed, that opiates were kind of a substitute for. And so counselors, once they wean people or once they get people on the treatment drugs and kind of allow them to be normal, and Aaron Jobe in the story talks about how the treatment drugs, she says, allows her to do the other counseling, the other therapy, to kind of resolve issues that she had when she was a teenager that were not resolved because she got into drugs instead of confronting them. So that's where the two-pronged approach comes in, that you need the drugs to stabilize people, and then you can start the deeper psychological work that started when they were a kid.
But there's some disagreement about those sort of those transitional therapies, like among people who in the recovery community and the medical community, about whether those transitional drugs or substitutes are effective or useful, right?
That's right. So you have groups like Narcotics Anonymous who preach submission to a higher power and complete abstinence. And I talked to a man who thinks that treatment drugs is basically cheating, that abstinence or recovery means abstinence and then change. And so there are still these two poles that are in some places entrenched, but you're seeing a lot more flexibility and a lot more give, just because there's a recognition that the extreme solutions are not working. And I talked to a man who tragically lost his son to an overdose, and he had been in an abstinence-only program, and they had inquired about medical treatments, and they were told that that was not a good idea. And the problem is that when people quit and then they relapse, their bodies are no longer used to the quantities of opiates they were taking before,
right?
And they take what they thought they could handle, and they can't, and they overdose and die. And that's what happened to Terry Alabaugh's son, Eli, who's profiled in the story.
So is there any, have there been any really convincing studies confirm one way or the other what the right approach is or the best approach?
I'm not sure about that. I worked with talked to a doctor at Hopkins, Caleb Alexander, who's generally one of the leading researchers on healing from opiates. And he seemed to indicate that there's not enough data yet to sort of conclusively draw a conclusion one way or the other. But he himself believes in the multi-pronged approach and throwing everything you can at the problem.
Now, yeah. John, one of the people you quote here is Father Richard Rohr, who many of our listeners may be familiar with. He says some challenging things here about the place of maybe sin in our culture and maybe our obsession with other people's sin. And in this context, he's calling for us to help people heal and like Jesus did.
That's right. So I have a family member, a cousin, who was addicted to heroin for a number of years. And in the family, it was sort of became this common parlance to criticize her, and it really is not the right idea, because people, one of the important things to understand about opiate addiction is that people make one decision early in their lives, and after that, it's no longer a choice, that your body craves opiates the same way it craves water. And so, I mean, unless you can fault somebody for drinking because they're thirsty, it's not really fair to castigate them as sinning because they are responding to this craving that is already in their body. So the sort of theological answer is the first decision to take the opiate is possibly sinful, but after that, you're just struggling and you need help in your struggle. And that's what Richard Rohr so wonderfully articulated in our interview, and that was one of the most interesting and best interviews I've ever had as a journalist. And he was just so eloquent in reminding me and us that as Christians, that the primary mission is healing and not criticizing other people for their sins.
Right. And that, and you know, he also, I think, helped to remind us that, you know, in, you know, a sin presupposes a kind of freedom of choice that is the very opposite of addiction, right?
That's right.
But, yeah, you're yeah. just your freedom, your choices are just very seriously compromised, and so it's hard to even, when you are in the throes of an addiction like this, it's hard to even talk about it as a moral issue.
That's right. And now you have these street drugs like fentanyl and carfentanyl, which are 50 to 100 times more potent than heroin, and so it really is this unique and very, I mean, extreme version of addiction. Even, I mean, it's beyond anything else that public health officials anywhere in the world have ever dealt with. I mean, this is one of the biggest problems that any sort of public health community has ever tried to deal with, and that's why you're seeing this desperation and this willingness to extend an arm to churches, and on the other hand, the church's willingness to invite in doctors and really throw everything they can at the problem.
Was there something about your covering this issue that's really surprised you, that came up that was new to you?
Yeah, it hadn't been clear to me kind of how necessary. I mean, I sort of assumed that treatment drugs were this exceptional solution that if you really had to, you would. And they come with their own problems. I mean, there's sort of the secondary market on the street in treatment drugs. People try to score Suboxone because it does give you, you know, a minor high or pain relief. But the degree to which medical people and even people who are in church-based or faith-based programs depend on them, and they're needed the same way that people need drugs for heart conditions or for diabetes. And so that the chemistry of that was not clear to me, and the chemistry of just how, I knew it was bad, but how vicious it is was not apparent to me before.
And what do you think? Which dioceses or parishes are really doing the most innovative things in response to this crisis?
I mean, the ones that have the biggest problems, I think Camden, New Jersey, the Catholic Charities there have a very aggressive approach. Baltimore, in Greensburg too, a lot of them are setting up or contributing to faith-based recovery homes where people can go. I know there's one in Western Pennsylvania. There's a woman in the story, Nina Corona, who has a new ministry that she started after her daughter struggled with addiction in her teens, that combines spiritual direction with a medical-based approach. And so it really is catching on, and it really is part of a trend where you're seeing faith leaders adopt a new and innovative approach.
Well, the piece is called The Opioid Crisis Demands a New Solution. Churches are hoping to be a part of it. You can find it at americamagazine.org. It's by John W. Miller. John, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for your many contributions to America.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Carrie. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Take care. So, it comes down to this. after 5 years and more than 200 shows and, gosh, all those guests talking about all of these issues. You had a baby.
I had two babies.
You had two babies, actually. Right. It's extraordinary. It's been quite a run.
It has. Is this the show where you finally do your musical review number? I mean, we've talked for a while about you being able to sort of sing us off the air sometime. Maybe today is the day.
Probably not. We'll see if I get invited back for that. But, you know, I have to say that I'm really deeply grateful to Cardinal Dolan, who first invited us to do this, and for the team here at Sirius that has accompanied us throughout this really wonderful adventure. I said on the very first program that America Magazine predated the radio. It only took us 98 years or something to get onto the radio, but when we did it in a big way, and now of course we're going to be you know, putting our audio resources into podcasts that we are releasing at America Magazine, we will continue to provide some content here from America on the Sirius channel.
You'll be able to hear some of those podcasts in this time slot for a while. So we've got Jesuitical, which is our podcast for by our young hip lay editors for people of all ages who are young at heart, hip and whatever they want to be hip and
so
lay.
That's not the three of us.
Correct. But you would have heard a number of those folks on the air as guest hosts, Zach Davis, Olga Segura, and Ashley McKinley.
I think they've all been on the show.
They've all been on the show, so you can hear more from them, as well as our Inside the Vatican podcast, which is starring Colleen Dully and Jerry O'Connell, who is our Vatican correspondent. And the two of them have an intergenerational conversation about news at the intersection of the church and the world coming out of the Vatican. So you'll be able to hear both of those shows on in this time slot for the next couple months.
Yeah, and you can find at americamagazine.org all of our other audio programming and podcasts. You know, the podcast that we have on the sexual abuse crisis.
Deliver Us.
We also have the podcast The Examine by Father James Martin,
right.
Which is a guided reflection on the events of your daily life and how to find God there.
Yeah, the prayer prayed by Saint Ignatius has encouraged all the Jesuits to pray twice a day, right?
Right.
But it's for everyone.
Yeah.
We won't ask you if you've
And we've got some
today.
More products in the
yes.
works. I don't think we're announcing anything yet, but we have a couple
and
new...
we also have the Word Podcast, which is a scriptural reflection for your weekly reading. So if you want to supplement the homily you get a Mass, or if you don't like the homily, you want something else,
right?
You can listen to the Word Podcast.
So we invite our listeners to, continue to listen to the Catholic Channel and all the great programming that they offer here and the great work that they do every day. And also, journey with us across the street to our headquarters, which you can access via americamagazine.org and find out all of the content, which we will continue to produce there, and as we have for 110 years.
Yeah, and to invite people to visit. I mean, we've
Tyler, you can come. You can come. We're right across the street. When you miss us, as I'm sure you will. he's just sort of laughing. So I'm going to we'll interpret that as we may.
Yeah, exactly.
But those sort of person-to-person events that we hold and bringing people in to have these discussions. So it's quite a journey we've had over the last 5 years, not just on the show, but just from our old offices on 56th Street. To the state-of-art headquarters we have now on 6th Avenue.
Yeah, right. No, exactly. It's a great space. Come, we have a What's our next event? Next event is on healthcare. June 10th.
June 10th.
Show up, talk about healthcare.
So you are always welcome. And so our thanks to everybody at Sirius. Our thanks to everybody at the Catholic Channel. Most of all, thank you, our listeners, who have been tuning into this program for the last 5 years. Obviously, we do all of this for you to serve the church and the world in the United States. And we couldn't imagine doing it without you, because we do it for you.
It's been a lot of fun to hear from listeners over the years. And like, I was at Mass once, and someone was like, "Hey, I think I listened to your radio show."
You
said, she's like, "I may have seen, yeah, like I definitely listened." And I was like, "Oh yeah, we have a show," and it's been fun to have those conversations.
It's been
with
a great way to connect with people on other parts of the country, people who maybe not as familiar with us. We often hear like, "Oh, I don't know American Magazine, but I know your radio show."
Yeah.
So it's been
apparently they've enjoyed our dynamic, you and me, Matt.
They have. I heard that the other day. So my thanks to you two for being a great co-host. You have been listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. You can find all of the content that we talked about today at americamagazine.org. And to subscribe to America Magazine, call 1-800-627-9533. That's 1-800-627-9533 for a smart Catholic take on faith and culture. And that's the way it is for the fifth week of Easter. I'm Father Matt Malone. For Kerry Weber and Tim Reedy, and for all of us at America Media, thank you and goodbye.
You're listening to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.